Inflation pops and bonds drop. Welcome. It's Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. Glad you are here on the show today. We're going to talk about 401k millionaires. Yeah, they're back. We're going to talk about how they do it. Ask Annex is coming up. And then aging in place. Maybe you're going to stay in the place that you're at. There's nothing wrong with that. And there's ways to arrange it. And we help our clients with that. Toward the end of the show, Wall Street Journal headline story Friday. Here's the headline. Realtors reach deal that will change how Americans buy and sell homes. Big story. We'll discuss it. I'm Danny Clayton. Dr. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economist, Annex Wealth Management is here.
It's great to be here.
Hey, Dave Spano, President and CEO, Annex Wealth Management.
Yeah, thanks, Danny. What an interesting week it was. And this is a good time of year. Lots of fun, a lot of tournaments happening. Of course, it was 3.14, right? March 14th. It was Pi Day earlier this week, and of course, St. Patrick's Day coming up. So a lot of interesting things happening. And what happened this week economically is we got a CPI and a PPI report. We're going to explain what that means because both were stronger than expected. That has a lot of implications of what the Federal Reserve is going to do.
It certainly does, especially since this upcoming Wednesday, March 20th, the Federal Reserve is going to be releasing their policy statement at 1 o'clock Central Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Time. I also think, importantly, they're going to be releasing their updated wild guesses about what's going to happen with the economy. It's called their dot plot. And so far, they've been indicating, let's maybe start cutting in June, do 3 cuts. Maybe now it's only 2 after these inflation numbers, the CPI numbers. So consumer price index, that was hotter than expected. That's the second month in a row that it came in hotter than expected. The PPI, producer price index, so that is the price that producers are getting for these goods. And so sometimes that can be taken as an indicator of future consumer price inflation. That was hotter than expected, but it was only 1 or 2 months in a row. And I don't know, it seems like the market maybe is taking 2 data points and trying to connect a straight line between them and saying it's a trend. I was always taught maybe you want to wait until you get 3 or 4 data points before you start drawing those lines.
Yeah, and we're going to have to pay attention to that. Of course, the trend sometimes can be your friend, but maybe in this case it may not be. And you also used another acronym, which may have flown by people, wild guesses. We call those WAGs, right? So
right.
There's no question about what's happening, but it was hotter than expected. And why that will have implications is because we have thought that the Federal Reserve was going to cut rates. First of all, in March, they kicked that can down the road, and now they're talking about June, and they may kick that can down the road. At some point, they're going to hurt their foot.
That's right. Yeah, either they're going to hurt their foot, or it's already hurting homeowners as far as being locked in, or people who are trying to sell their homes. It's also hurting people who have credit card debt. It's also hurting small businesses that maybe haven't been able to lock in these incredibly low rates that we had over the last few years. So even if the Fed doesn't hurt their foot, it certainly does feel like they're hurting the foot of a lot of small businesses that are out there.
And the other thing that we saw in there was the core retail sales report. Why that's important, it gives another indication of the health of the consumer. Obviously, we've covered over and again that GDP measures the health of the consumer, and 2/3 of GDP, of course, comes from consumer spending. So we're going to have to watch that, and it was slower than expected, and the stocks in the consumer areas reacted to that.
It did. So the retail sales number came in weaker than expected. It rose 0.6% month on month. But for some context, that's only up 1.5% from a year ago. Now, these are not inflation adjusted numbers. So if you adjust for the 3.8% inflation that we've had over the last year, the real volume of sales has actually fallen. And that's not necessarily that great of a sign as far as with the consumer health. Now, in terms of the different components, over the last 12 months, furniture store sales are down 10%. Building material store sales are also down like 10%. The only areas that are really strong and positive, online sales, up about 6%. And then, of course, food and drinking places, that's up 6.3%. So you almost have this bifurcation is what we would call it, or this forking between what's been happening as far as with, say, the traditional sectors of the retail sales that most people think of versus these more, I don't want to call them untraditional, but kind of these other areas people maybe don't think about them too frequently, online sales, and then what you spend as far as at bars and restaurants. That's the part that's been really rising.
Danny, we talked about bar and restaurant sales going up, and you're a health nut. That's not you pushing those numbers, is it?
Restaurants maybe, bars no.
Yeah, no, right. But really right now what we want to do is pay attention to those numbers, and especially as we go into the rest of the year. Of course, we've covered the fact that this is a presidential election year. That is also a positive. The second thing that's going to happen is earnings season is going to pick up again in April. But between now and then, we may have a bumpy ride, Brian.
Yes, it does seem like there's some seasonal weakness here. Now, what does seasonal mean? It's not necessarily tied to, you know, the actual season, summer, winter, et cetera. It's just these different calendar effects. And in a presidential election years, March, April, and May can oftentimes be choppier parts of the market. You know, we know who the candidates are. Oftentimes, there's a lot of vitriol. There's a lot of arguing, a lot of uncertainty about who might win and what sort of policies might emerge. And so this is actually the part of the year that tends to be a little bit choppier than other times. As we get towards the election, it gets a little bit clearer, perhaps, as to who might win, what sort of policies might come out. And then November and December just historically have been very positive for the markets in presidential election years.
And the last positive piece I want to throw out there is we saw a report by Goldman Sachs suggesting that there will be buybacks. Mm-hmm. We want to explain what that means, but they were suggesting that 13% buyback improvement in 2024 and 16% in 2025. How should the listeners take that information?
Yeah, so stock buybacks are companies are able to buy back their own shares. Now, what that does is if you're still holding on to those shares, you're basically getting a bigger slice of the pie. As far as the earnings per share, typically everything else being held the same, will increase if they just do a buyback. Now, there are some changes to the tax code where it's trying to change businesses from doing buybacks to doing more dividends. But still, buybacks, if companies have a lot of cash sitting around, which some of these very large companies, they're cash cows, and they have a lot of cash on the balance sheet, one of the ways they can put it to work, they can reinvest in the business, or they can distribute that to shareholders. That does tend to be supportive of equity prices going forward.
And folks, all of this information, inflation reports, the Federal Reserve's action, presidential election year, buybacks, all of this is going to go into what's going to happen over the next several months. That's the reason why your portfolio should be aligned properly. Know what you own, why you own it, and how much you're paying for it.
Yep, and the place is annexwealth.com. Click on that Get Started button. That is our Week in Review. It's always available on demand at the top of the hour, wherever you get your podcasts, also in the Axiom newsletter. If you're not signed up for that, make sure you do that at annexwealth.com. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, Saturday, March 16th. A little later, we're going to celebrate 401k millionaires. Thanks for listening. We're going to be right back on 620 WTMJ. Welcome back. Hope you can join us Tuesday for a webinar version of our presentation, Election Year Investment Myths. Happens on Tuesday, 3 o'clock Eastern, 2 o'clock Central. We're given two time zones. We know a lot of you are listening on the stream across the country. It's Tom Parks, Deanne Phillips, reviewing common investing myths that tend to pop up during election years. We've had this out on the road. It's been really well received. We'd like you to be there. All the details at annexwealth.com/events. In the studio, Dr. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economist, Annex Wealth Management. Dave Spano, President and CEO.
Danny, you know what? Our investment team gets up early and reads lots of research. And one of those things that has been getting a lot of attention is this $8.8 trillion sitting on the sidelines, air quotes for those radio listeners. And what that means is that it's generally in money markets. But I do want to break that down because there's this idea that some of this money is going to come back into the markets and chase equities. But that's not necessarily true. Some of this money market is safety, some of it's corporate, and so I do want to break that down.
Yeah, the $8 trillion that a lot of people hear about, it's like, wow, that is a really big number. Because, well, it is. However, we have to look at it more through the lens of what is this from a portfolio allocation perspective? So the people who are holding this cash, is that a bigger chunk than usual of their overall financial assets? And so when we look at the data, it's actually about historically average. So your typical household, if they're sitting on about 10% of their portfolio in this quote unquote cash, which as you pointed out, is usually money market accounts or savings accounts, so it's interest bearing, it doesn't seem like it's that unusual of an amount. And so I'm not sure that people are over allocated to cash and that they're going to start chasing equities. In fact, some of the data might suggest that individuals are actually over allocated to equities compared to historical norms.
And we're going to have to watch interest rates, and there's no question why this has been happening. We're starting to get paid more than 5% on some money markets. And so that is a good alternative to the risk of equities. And so we are watching this. We'll see if some of this comes back in and if people change their asset allocation. But at least from 30,000 feet, it is another bullish indicator.
It is. Yeah, it is a bullish indicator in the sense that people are earning more on their cash. That's supporting economic activity. And my guess is that we're going to see people begin to extend duration. So just a technical way of saying, hey, instead of sitting on cash, why not try to lock in these higher, longer-term interest rates, where instead of getting 5% on your money market, if you can get a little bit more holding a bond instead, I think that's probably where we're going to see some of the shifting. We have seen yields, like the 10-year Treasury, go from under 4% up to 4.3%. That starts drawing investors in because that's an attractive yield.
So longer-term bonds and perhaps even a CD that has a different duration. So a lot of really interesting things that people can do.
That's Dave Spano, President and CEO, Annex Wealth Management. Dr. Brian Jacobson, our Chief Economist. Still more to come. We've got them for the rest of the hour. Time in the market, not timing the market. That's how 401k millionaires are created. How do they do it exactly? That's next. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ. Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management? Tom Parks, Director of Retirement Plan Services, Annex Wealth Management. He and his team work with a number of companies to help their employees save, invest, and plan for retirement. Welcome back, Tom.
Hey, Danny.
In the last 6 years, you and I have done a segment like this probably three times. We're talking about 401k millionaires. The point of this is to celebrate your patience, folks, with your 401k, but also remind you, you're playing a long game. There are times that we weren't celebrating as many 401k millionaires, but we'll get into that. Tom, here's the headline. Soaring number of Americans are now 401k millionaires.
And that's awesome news, Danny. We got to take the wins and celebrations when we can. So this is according to Fidelity. You and I always go to that well for information because they have tons of information, proprietary, and they could basically do their own research by looking at their book of business. And they said that 401k accounts jumped 20% from September to the end of December. And things have been pretty good since then as well. So it's, I think, reasonable to assume that that number's probably gone up even from then.
Retirement savers ended last year with an average account balance at their highest level in nearly 2 years. More than a third of workers increased their retirement savings contribution rate last year. That has to be music to your ears.
It definitely is, Danny, because the markets certainly help. That's why we talk a lot about asset allocation, diversification. But ultimately, if you're not putting money into the thing, it doesn't matter how good your rate of return is. You guys got to have some contributions to grow. So the fact that people are not only contributing, but increasing, even if it's incremental, that's fantastic news.
We've talked about 401k discipline, and 401k discipline is important. It also helped the market was kind of cooking at the end of last year.
There's no question that securities markets have helped a lot when it comes to the growth in the overall dollar balance.
Yeah. Now, you touched on this. It wasn't just the stock market. You got to pour in.
It's a combination of the two. So I think, you know, personally, the most important ingredient is your contributions. Because like I said, no matter what the market's doing, if you're not participating in it with your dollars, it doesn't really matter. But it is a combination of the two. And so we see when we look through the reports of our clients, we do these annual reviews and we'll take a look at the overall plan and, you know, how is money allocated throughout the plan. We'll always, in every review, we'll see some people, two or three people who have all their money in, you know, the stable value fixed or, you know, money market type account. And we say, okay, you know, we got to talk to those people. They're understandably concerned about volatility in the market, but they're missing out on this stuff that you and I are talking about right here. So it's a constant education process.
Tom Parks is Director of Retirement Plan Services at Annex Wealth Management. All right, I'm looking around, see if anybody's noticing. Hey, what's the secret sauce to becoming a 401k millionaire? You can tell us.
Well, Danny, it's kind of like the lottery. You got to be in it to win it. So if you want to participate, it does help the earlier you start, for sure. So, you know, if you're in your 20s, please do not think of it as, oh, I've got to save 20% of my pay. Just start putting some stuff in there and you'll be amazed at how it grows for you over time. But consistency is another thing. Not only consistently participating, but consistently ratcheting it up over time. So I think those are the things that are really going to give you the most bang for your buck.
Here's where Tom and I are going to turn into the stern uncles at the barbecue talking to the younger folk. And we've said this time and time again, but boy, do I believe it. You gotta not be afraid to save enough that it hurts just a little.
That is my rule of thumb, Danny. There are lots of really complicated calculations that we can get into. People generally do save between somewhere 10 to 15% of your pay, which is a good rule of thumb. But I think if it isn't hurting at least a little, you are not doing enough. It should at least hurt some.
You've taught me, and I follow that
It's something that this was not my background when I started in this career, Danny. I studied philosophy and economics, and so I was trying to think of ways to communicate this stuff to people, and that just seemed true to me. If it hurts a little, I must be doing something right. I'm heading in the right direction.
Back to the beginning of the segment, we've talked about 401k millionaires probably three times, maybe more. There were times that we didn't, and it's important to say that.
I started in this industry, Danny, in 2001, and that was a turbulent time. You know, we had the whole dot-com bubble and all that stuff. Then you fast forward to 2008. Those were some rough times in the market. So there have been periods of time when it wasn't all roses. We've been very fortunate in recent years with just a general uptrend in rates of return in the markets. But no, it's not always easy. Again, going back to discipline, that's why you got to keep going. You got to keep going through, heading in that direction. In the long run, it has tended to pay off.
Who wouldn't want to be a 401k millionaire? It takes a little sacrifice, but what it really takes is a solid benefits program. That's what Annex Wealth Management and the Retirement Plan Services Department does. We're ready to work with more companies, aren't we?
We absolutely are, and we have so much fun doing it. This is what we do day in and day out, is try to help people understand what is the benefit that's being offered to them by their company, and how can they take advantage of it and make the most of it.
Tom Parks, Director of Retirement Plan Services, Annex Wealth Management. Thank you.
Thank you, Danny.
It is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. It's Saturday the 16th, bottom of the hour. Let's take a quick break and get caught up. And for that, we go to the WTMJ Breaking News Center.
We're back. It's time for Ask Annex. Got a question for us? You head to our website, annexwealth.com. Look for the Ask tab. We get back to everybody. Don't have to be a client, though we'd like you to be a client, because then we can really, really help. In the studio, Ken Bellinger, Senior Trader. Hello.
Hi, Danny.
And we got Fred Coleman, a CFP and a wealth manager at Annex Wealth Management. Welcome back.
Thank you, Danny.
First question on Ask Annex. I'm quite confident with the 5% plus for my current cash account. Doesn't look like rates are changing anytime soon. So is there any pressure to consider a next move?
Well, here's the thing about interest rates, especially when you're in a cash account. Once interest rates begin to drop, it'll be almost overnight where that yield on that cash drops. So now is the opportunity, because the Fed has started to telegraph its moves. Now is the opportunity to start locking in some of those higher rates. That could be a CD if you're looking for just to get that 1 or 2 years. Or if you want to extend it even further and lock it up for the long term, you can look at some high grade corporate bonds. Because once interest rates drop, those opportunities likely won't be around for the long term. And you'll need to probably take on some additional risk if you're looking to get in that 5%.
Yeah, absolutely right, Fred. And I think, again, the core of this goes back to kind of what's the purpose of this cash. We've got a short-term expense coming up, say less than a year. Money market's great, right? But if you've got, maybe it's a longer-term savings account, or it's just part of your broader financial plan for the long term, now's a great time to think about moving away from that money market and towards the long arc, whether that be moving to bonds or into the equity market.
But it's not going to go from 5 to 1%.
No, it'll be a gradual drop, right? But the thing is, with cash accounts, we don't know how fast it's going to go down, right? We can predict, but we know it's going to go down.
Takes a long time to go up.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't take much time to go down. It's Ask Annex. Next question, and this is a big one. Currently feeling overexposed with, he names the stock, but it's a big one. Considering options to liquidate 60% of my position, which is $150,000, and diversify, but cautious due to tax implications. Currently maxing the Roth yearly, also contributing 15% to a 401k with a 6% match. Unsure the best strategy to move money to a, quote, safer position, liquidate in one fell swoop, and eat the taxes, or cash out in lumps over the next several years to hit the max for a 401k. Any advice is welcome.
A lot of this kind of goes to a combination of tax planning and how concentrated is this position, which is information we don't have. But it sounds like from a saving perspective, we're maxing out the 401k, we're maxing out the Roth. So in terms of the concentration level, every year that thing's just going to get less and less concentrated as you're naturally investing in other assets. That said, if we're nervous about it, or it's a significant portion of, you know, your overall assets, then yeah, I think it's time to kind of come up and make a plan with how to get out of there. And Fred, maybe you want to talk about the tax implications a little bit.
What you were saying, Ken, is how important is this lump sum to your financial plan? There's really a very thin line between looking to minimize taxes and protect your gains. Where does this position fit into the long-term financial plan? So there are some things you can do to protect the position. You don't want to sell and realize those gains right away. You can use options as insurance. I think of when you have a large position, buying a put option. So that gives you the right to sell that position. No matter if it goes up, goes down, you have that locked in as insurance. The second is important, and it's tax strategy, right? We don't want to just liquidate in one fell swoop, not all the time at least, because all those gains will be in 1 year. So thinking about the strategy, you had some tax losses from previous years that you're able to carry forward to potentially offset those gains. Or the other option is just spreading those gains across many different years when the opportunity comes. But I think that you're doing a great job with the 401k, but don't forget that brokerage bucket is very important because it's going to give you some more flexibility and tax diversification.
You know, I think another thing to consider here is if these are short-term or long-term capital gains as well, right? So, you know, if these are long-term capital gains, I mean, we've held this asset for more than a calendar year. Those are going to be taxed at the 15 to 20% range, depending on your overall income. And if it's short-term gains, it just goes straight to your income as if just a, you know, a check from your employer or what have you. So I think that's another important piece to consider is that, you know, even if you're in a 30-something percent tax bracket, if these are long-term gains, you're looking at probably 15 to 20, which matters as well. Mm-hmm. And the other thing you can consider is doing some tax loss harvesting. It sounds like we're investing in individual equities. We all like to think that we bat 1,000 and Babe Ruth has nothing on us, but you're going to have some positions that are at losses. And those are opportunity to kind of marry harvesting that loss along with some of the gain in this concentrated position to gracefully exit.
You see the way he kind of snuck baseball in? You worked in baseball, didn't you?
I did. Not on the field.
Yeah.
I thought you were a tennis guy.
Now I am, yeah.
That's the way he gets injured. Not the way he gets paid. Ken Bellinger, senior trader, thank you.
Thank you.
And Fred Coleman, CFP and a wealth manager at Annex Wealth Management, thank you.
Thanks, Danny.
That's Ask Annex. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. Deanne Phillips is back. She is Director of Client Learning and Development, CFP, and a CDFA at Annex Wealth Management. Hello.
Hello, Danny.
So I found this really sweet letter. Could you read it, please?
You bet. I'm a healthy and active widow in my late 70s. My intention is to stay in my home forever. That is, until a good friend visited and said, you should be moving. The house is much too big with too many stairs. Move before you have to. That jolted me since I love where I live and I love my home and community. It's where my late husband and I raised our three children. After 40 years, what should I reluctantly be thinking about?
Key word there is reluctantly,
you
and
bet.
That is a tough one, a very tough one. Let's talk things over. Downsizing or aging in place, is this something you see a lot of?
Yes, especially downsizing relative to our stuff. All the things we've collected through the years. However, we're starting to hear more people talk about right-sizing their homes. They aren't necessarily going smaller. They're moving into something more appropriate for their needs and values.
Downsizing or aging in place. If you'd like to stay in your home, you're not alone. A 2022 study said that 88% of adults 50 and older want to age in place. 77% in an AARP survey. Are there clear reasons?
Well, aging in our current home gives us control and autonomy. It can promote life satisfaction, a positive quality of life, self-esteem, all of which are needed to remain happy, healthy, and well into old age. But many older adults and their families have concerns about safety, getting around, or other daily activities of living. Living at home as you age requires careful consideration and planning.
And most adults are not prepared to age in place.
Well, the best time to think about how to age in place is before you need a lot of care, right? Planning ahead allows you to make important decisions while you're still able. So think about the kinds of help you need now and might need in the future. Consider any illnesses that you or your spouse might have and find out how the illnesses could make it hard for someone to get around or take care of themselves in the future.
Not all older adults want to downsize. In fact, the pandemic served as a motivator for many to rethink their lifestyle and what's important. But you need to ask a lot of questions. What are a few?
Definitely. And while some people do upsize to accommodate a growing family or of great-grandchildren, we do need to consider, is the space too much to maintain over time? Are the costs of maintaining this space, everything from utilities and the maintenance on the house to property taxes, are all those expenses going to stress our goals and assets over time? Also, we want to consider, if I'm here alone, is it too isolated? Will I be lonely? Will transportation be an issue? You know, Danny, my grandmother never moved because the house she'd built decades previously was on a bus line. She never drove. It was convenient for her. And then there's also the consideration of the equity in the house. Is it so much house that the money you want to use for travel and lifestyle is tied up and you're living in it?
Deanna, we had some friends with a really nice suburban home, and they sold it to move to an urban setting, and they had a lot of stuff. Even after they moved, my friend said to me, Danny, you got to purge, and then you purge more, and then you purge more. We've lived in the same place for a while. We got a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Now, think of this as pre-downsizing, right? And there are several reasons to pre-downsize. You can work at your own pace without pressures or deadlines, and doing it when you're physically up to the task is good, when we can carry the boxes and, you know, downstairs. Plus, taking care of it now means that your loved ones will have less to do after you're gone, or if they're helping you move when it becomes critical timing. You know, there's also that feeling of accomplishment. Actually, purging might make you want to stay in your current home longer. Now, I read this stat. I challenged this. It said the average home has about 300,000 items in it. But if you count all utensils, random paperwork, clothing, and then you throw in your sock drawer, it can be significantly more. I'm sure you can see how it adds up.
I've seen junk drawers with 300,000 items. Yeah. Sure. So these are big steps, and they're not to be taken lightly. It's a part of your life plan, which probably means it's part of your financial plan.
Right. So we as financial planners can easily build into your plan a change in housing expenditures, whether it's right-sizing or downsizing, amendments to stay in your own current home, or physically moving into an age-in-place community. We'll actually show you how that plays out financially in your plan with your money and what your spend looks like afterwards.
You're smart because you, what, moved like three times in the last 10 years, right?
Oh,
this is
goodness.
One way to keep
I don't know if that's smart.
Okay, right. But that's one way to keep the junk down.
You would think. Yes.
You would think. For investment, retirement planning, tax planning, and estate planning, know the difference. Website, annexwealth.com. Click that Get Started button. Start that wealth metric process. Deanna Phillips, Director of Client Learning and Development, CFP, and a CDFA at Annex Wealth Management. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We are back. And another reminder, three easy ways to access content from Annex Wealth Management. We do it on the air. We do it on the stream. We do it on the podcast. This show is going to go live on Spotify, Apple, and other podcast platforms at the top of the hour. At the beginning of the show, I mentioned this story that dropped on Friday in the Wall Street Journal. Here's the headline. Realtors reach deal that will change how Americans buy and sell homes. Dave, you said, I think this is going to be a big thing.
I think it's going to be a big story for sure. And the reason why is, you know, we get the opportunity to talk to lots of families across all of our offices, and folks have brought this up. So not only was it a Wall Street Journal article, but it's also on Main Street as well. And so I do want to talk about it because it's going to affect a lot of people. There was this antitrust case brought against some realtor organizations that they were conspiring to keep commissions high. They entered into a settlement to pay some money to make sure that goes away. So will it change the industry is really the question.
Yeah, and when I look at the terms of the settlement, number one, I was a little surprised by the dollar amount. It was like $418 million, especially since a couple of weeks ago, maybe, that it was in the billions that they were talking about. And so maybe that's a little bit better relative to having to fork over, you know, the few billion dollars. But in terms of what might actually change, I think time will only tell, because in this agreement, it effectively means that the buyers, that if they have an agent, somebody representing them in a transaction, and so there's a contract there where the realtor actually represents the buyer, the default is that they represent the seller. But in this case now, they're basically going to have to negotiate how they're going to get paid, because traditionally, it gets paid out of whatever the transaction is. You know, the seller lists it. Let's say it's like a 6% commission, and they agree that the buyer agent will get a certain percent. Maybe it's 2.4%, whatever it is. And so maybe there's going to be a little bit more flexibility. But in other areas where they have kind of experimented with this a little bit, I think Washington State is an example, it didn't really change the practices all that much. It did on the margin, only like a fraction of a percentage of the transactions that took place looked any different after they changed the rules. So I think we're going to really have to see, what does this mean? It will likely bring a lot more transparency to the fee situation with the commissions, because right now it is kind of buried in there as far as, oh, I'm going to pay a certain dollar amount, and then you get through, and then they say, well, title insurance is this, and then the seller commission is that, and then the buyer's commission is this. So maybe it's going to bring a little bit more transparency to what people are actually paying.
Transparency and fees, that's a drum you've been beating for a while, Dave.
Yeah, for a couple of decades, for certain. And that is really, as we act as a fiduciary, that's one of the things we talk about, because a lot of times investors go to agents, if you will, and they don't tell them the amount of commission that they're going to get, for example, in an annuity product. And so we talk about fee transparency all the time. But I think not only is this article applicable to our industry, I think it's going to be a big deal in the fact that now the agents and the seller are going to have to communicate, are going to have to be transparent. And I really think the better agents are really going to use this transparency as a benefit on why they are providing a benefit. And that is what they're going to sell. And I think that's a really good thing, Brian.
Yes, I agree. It's about in business, right? Are you going to try to compete on value or on price? Oftentimes, you're trying to compete on both. But I think that this is an opportunity for that type of transparency to really come to the fore. And maybe it's also going to remind individuals that when you enter into these transactions, the agents that are involved, so this doesn't just apply to real estate, this applies to anywhere. Which side of the table are they on?
Right.
Is that agent, are they on your side of the table as the buyer? Or are they sitting across from you and trying to sell you something? And I think that could be a really big benefit.
And
there'll
probably be a washout, Brian, of some, you know, tangentially, of some of these agents who are on the periphery who aren't doing a lot, who aren't communicating well. And I think the good agents are really going to take advantage of this. And I do think that what we're going to see across the industry, it was a major change in our industry when stockbrokers couldn't charge an enormous amount of commission to do a stock transaction. That's effectively have gone away. And so I do think this you're going to start to see this in the real estate business as well. And I think the consumer is better off for it.
Yeah. When the New York Stock Exchange was formed under that buttonwood tree on Wall Street in New York, it was actually a way in order for them to fix commissions, right? So really the New York Stock Exchange, many, many years ago, it formed as a way to almost conspire against investors to make sure that they weren't competing based on the commission. And now those rules have changed. The London Stock Exchange, that you had this, they called it the Big Bang back in 1986, where they got rid of the fixed commissions, where they were conspiring against them. And now look at all of the competition, all the various ways in which people can invest. You can have your own brokerage account. You can have different bells and whistles associated with these different ways in which you're able to invest. And so it was really triggered by some of this change in the legislation, change in the rules. So it'll be fascinating to see how this plays out.
Okay, folks. Dave was being fairly gracious earlier when he said it frustrates him, this whole commission thing. I think it really frustrates you. I mean, I think that's the reason you chose to be a fiduciary.
Well, I think it goes back to why I did it, you know, back in the late 1990s, is because there was not transparency. And it was really built for the agent or the stockbroker, and it wasn't built for the consumer. And I think that's what this really does. It's the reason why I've been pounding the table for all of these years about being a fee-only fiduciary. And folks, those three words have meaning. Fee-only, that means no commissions. Fiduciary, to always act in the best interest of your client. That is the really core of our mantra.
Yeah, a lot of people, you know, they describe something called the spidey sense. If they right. know that they're being sold right. something, if you've ever gotten that feeling.
And Danny, people can pick up on that no matter where they are.
Yeah, we think so. And we hope in this last hour you picked up on what we are talking about. Dr. Brian Jacobson, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dave Spano, President and CEO, Annex Wealth Management. Thank you.
Thank you, Danny.
Reminder, Election Year Myths, the webinar happens Tuesday, 2 p.m. Hot topic, lots of interest. Sign up at annexwealth.com/events. Folks, what you heard in the last hour is just a sample of what we do and what we'll do for you as a client. Get the whole picture. We're confident we're going to fill the bill for you and your family. See you next Saturday, 10 o'clock. It's Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, WTMJ.